Narayanam namaskritya naram cheva narottamam devim sarasvatim vyasam tato jayam udirayat. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 30, Chapter entitled The Description of Adverous Fruitive Activities, Text Number 21. Tayor nibhinna hridayas. Tarjanayar jata vepatu. Patishwabir bhakshyamana. Ato gam swam manusmaran.
Ato gam swam manusmaran.
Tayor nibhinna hridayas. Tarjanayar jata vepatu. Patishwabir bhakshyamana. Ato gam swam manusmaran. Tayor nirbhinna hridayas. Tarjanayar jata vepatu. Patishwabir bhakshyamana. Ato gam swam anusmaran. Tayo nirbhinna hridayas. Tarjanayar jata vepatu. Patishwabir bhakshyamana. Ato gam swam manusmaran. Tayo of the Yamadutas. Nirbhinna. Broken. Hridaya. His heart. Tarjanay. By the threatening. Jata. Arisen. Vepatu, trembling. Pati, on the road. Shwabi, by dogs. Bhakshyamana, being bitten. Arta, distressed. Arkam, sins. Swam, his. Anusmaran, remembering. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. While carried by the constables of Yamaraj, he is overwhelmed and trembles in their hands. While passing on this road, he is bitten by dogs, and he can remember the sinful activities of his life. He is thus terribly distressed. Translation responsibly. While carried by the constables of Yamaraj, he is overwhelmed and trembles in their hands. While passing on the road, he is bitten by dogs. And he can remember the sinful activities of his life. He is thus terribly distressed. Purport. It appears from this verse that while passing from this planet to the planet of Yamaraj, the culprit arrested by Yamaraj's constables meets many dogs, which bark and bite just to remind him of his criminal activities of sense gratification. It is said in Bhagavad Gita that one becomes almost blind and is bereft of all sense when he is infuriated by the desire for sense gratification. He forgets everything. Kamas taste tire, krita jnana. One is bereft of all intelligence when he is too attracted by sense gratification. And he forgets that he has to suffer the consequences also. Here the chance for recounting his activities of sense gratification is given by the dogs engaged by Yamaraj. While we live in the gross body, such activities of sense gratification are encouraged, even by modern government regulations. In every state all over the world, such activities are encouraged by the government in the form of birth control. Women are supplied pills and they are allowed to go to a clinical laboratory to get assistance for abortions. This is going on as a result of sense gratification. Actually, sex life is meant for begetting good children. But because people have no control over the senses and there is no institution to train them to control the senses, the poor fellows fall victim to the criminal offences of sense gratification. And they are punished after death, as described in these pages of Srimad Bhagavatam. Omigyan timarandasya gyananjana shalakaya chakshurimilitam yena tasmaya shri gurave namaha shri chaitanya manobhishtam stapitam yena bhutale swayam rupa kadamayam dadati swapadantikam vancha kaupatarubhyascha kripa sindhu bhavacha patitanam bhavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Hare Hare. So this chapter is a rather vivid description of what it is like in the planets where we are punished for sinful activities. This all takes place in the lower regions of the universe, in the southern position. What is the name of Yamaraja's planet? That's the Sanskrit name. Yeah. What is the English?
Hey.
Was it?
Hey.
Hey. Yeah. Yeah. It's called Hades. Like that. That's not English, but that's yeah. What's the English name for Yamaraja's planet? Yeah, it's called Pluto. So the planet that we call Pluto, it disappeared a few years ago. Yamaraj went on a holiday. So it is considered to be a planet, one of the ninth planet of this solar system. It's right, it's in the southern direction, so it's out there. That's south, so it's down that direction. If you look at the night sky, it's kind of back that way. So it's in the lower region of the universe, like in the lower part of the universe. So Yamaraj, he has his planet there, Yamaloka. And he arranges for all the sinful living entities to come, and they're given punishments. So Yamaraj is extremely powerful. He is a representative of Krishna, as are all the demigods. But he is Krishna's representative in terms of dealing with the sinful living entities at the time of death. So he has to be extremely powerful and extremely intelligent to be able to work out who needs to be punished and who does not need to be punished. Because the living entities, they are acting in a sinful way, and then he has to keep track of all of the sinful activities of all the living entities. So it means it is the level of intelligence which is beyond comprehension. It's like the fastest computers and like that. I mean, what they can do, it is almost like there is some shakti in the computer because it can. It's like when you do a Google search. So that's actually quite phenomenal. You know, we don't take it as anything so special because we just grow up with it. You go, oh, Google. You know, you get on your phone and you go, do, and you say, oh, the internet's slow. You know, because if it's not happening within one moment that, you know, your search comes up, you think, oh, it's slow. But, I mean, if you think about what actually takes place, you know, you've got knowledge coming from every inch of the earth, you know, on a worldwide web. You know, everything is... And then within a moment you can have that, all that information there. I mean, that's incredibly intelligent. So Yamaraja's system is multiple times more complicated and more intrinsic and more powerful than that, multiple times. He has that every living entity in the universe, he has to keep track of all the karma simultaneously and just bring that. So when the living entity arrives, it's say which one has to come, you have to bring, which punishment he needs to get. Yeah, extremely powerful. So these are representatives of Krishna. Krishna himself gives this Shakti. Krishna Shakti Vina. He puts the Shakti into the living entity so that they can perform these tasks. So extremely powerful. So that is Yamaraja's position. Right? He is not like an ordinary living entity. Actually, if you look in the Ramayana, it was Lord Ram's appearance day not long ago. So actually there was one time when Ravana was fighting with Yamaraj. And this is before Lord Ram met Ravana. But Yamaraj and Ravana had a battle. You know, because Ravana was going all around the place, you know, beating this one and beating that one. Indrajit. Who did he defeat? Indrajit was his Ravan's son. He became known as Indrajit. He defeated Indra, even his son. Actually, Ramayana tells, or there are stories that tell, Indra could have beaten Ravan's son, could have killed him. But then one voice came from the sky, said, no, leave him. And we'll take care of him later. Right? So same thing happened. Ravana was fighting with Yamaraj. And then it got to the point where Yamaraj was sent the Yamadutas and he'd smashed Ravan's chariot and his weapons, and the Yamadutas come, they were climbing up onto the chariot, right, ready to grab Ravan. And Yamaraj had him and he was going to throw his staff at him and he was going to destroy him. And then one voice said, no, leave him. Someone else will take care of him. Just leave him. So that's how powerful Yamaraj is. Yamaraj could even defeat Ravana. So it shows he is super powerful, extraordinary living entity. So the living entities, they then get pulled by Yamaraj, wherever you are in the universe, if you're doing the wrong thing. Right? At the end of your life, you're taken to Yamaraj's court, down to Pluto, and you arrive there, and they say, so what have you been doing? And then... Yamaraj has one accountant. And what is his name? Chitragupta. He is his assistant. So every time you do a sinful activity, every time you do a pap, right? All of us are learning not to do pap because we are Vaishnavabhas. We're practicing to be devotees now. But if you do a pap, every time you do a pap, Chitragupta, in your skull, he writes... He writes right in the top of your skull, you did this, and you did that. It gives you your little... So then when you get to Yamaraj, you arrive, then Yamaraj says, so what did he do? And Chitragupta grabs you, holds your head, and then he reads. He said he did this, and this, and this, and this, and this, and this. It's all written. Every time you do something, pop, any some simple activity, it's all recorded. So Yamaraj, then Yamaraj hears it all, and once he's heard it all, then he says, okay. Then they say, what should we do with him? And he says, you send him to that subterranean hellish planet. You send him to that one. Now you send him there, 1 million years there, or 1 million years, and be tortured like that. So it is a very frightening situation. Yamaraj is actually a devata. He's very beautiful. The devatas are very beautiful. So he's very Beautiful form, golden, beautiful form. But when you meet him in his court, if you've been sinful, he puts on a vesh, puts on a mask, and he looks like a monster or a kind of very terrifying. Puts on like a mask and he looks at you with fiery eyes and big teeth and everything. He doesn't actually look like that. It's just for his job. And then he only puts on that, comes out, and then he scares everyone. And then, you know, you're taken by the Yamadutas, they drag you in. The Yamaraj is sitting there. And he says, "And what has he done?" Right? And there's fire everywhere. Right? And it scares you like anything. Mm. That's why many of us are afraid of the dark. Remember when you're a kid? Mm-hmm. Were you scared of the dark when you're a kid? Yeah. Maybe.
You have to go outside to the toilet.
Yeah. And we're very
scared.
Very frightened.
Yeah.
Now we're adults, you know, more or less scared. Maybe not as scared, but when you're a kid, sometimes. So that's all coming. It's like my uncle's house when I was growing up. Sometimes we go underneath his house like to play. He had like a cave. Not a cave, but, you know, under the house. Felt like a cave when you're a kid. But he would say to us, "Don't go under there. The boogeymen live there." So we would go under and we'd think, "Oh, some guys are going to jump out and grab us." And like that, because that's in our subtle body, because in our previous experience, then we've been to Yamaloka, right? And the Yamadutas have grabbed us and pulled us to Yamaraj. So it is very frightening, right? And it says here in the verse that the dogs are barking, all these things are taking place, and then Yamaraj will send you, you go there, and it's very, very frightening experience. So what is the point of all of this? What is the point? The point is that sometimes there has to be punitive measures. It means we have to be punished, right? Punishment is a form of reformation, right? What's the best form of reformation? Right? Best way to reform yourself is hearing, right? You just say, someone says to you, "Don't do it." Right? Give up meat eating, illicit sex, intoxication, gambling. You just say, "Okay, no problem." You just heard it, and that's it. You're gone. That's why with children, it says, Chanakya says, up until the age of 5, you're very affectionate. How old are they? So up until 5, you're very affectionate. But then Chanakya says, between 5 and 15, you're very strict. Because that's when you have to form the character, right? If there's not discipline at that time, the character becomes ruined. 5 to 15, very soon. And then he says, then you become a friend again at 15, because they'll start doing whatever they want anyway. So then you have to, you can be more liberal. But you have to build the character. So there has to be discipline, right? And that develops good character within the person. So in the same way, with any punishment we receive, the best way to reform it is just by hearing. Someone says to you, "Do not do that." And we say, "Okay." And then we don't do it. But if you won't act like that, if you are rebellious, then you have to be punished. So that's why Yamaraji has to punish. That's why parents have to punish. That's why government has to punish. Right? Because if someone acts outside of the proper course of action or disciplinary action, then we have to punish them. We have to say, "Okay, you're doing the wrong thing." So that is necessary. So Yamaraj is doing that for the conditioned soul. They go through all this punishment. They're meant to then come out of it and be a little reformed, a little God-fearing. The problem with the modern society in this day and age that we live in, people think, "Oh, I can just do whatever I want and you can get away with it." People think like that. They actually think, "I can just do whatever I want in life and I can get away." Right? And people live their whole lives. They're organized. Some people, their profession is being a criminal. Like, I was in Adelaide many years ago, I was distributing books. I met one man. So I said, there's a book about yoga, meditation, karma, reincarnation, like that. And then I said, "What do you do for a living?" And he said, "I pinch things." And he just kind of smiled at me and said, "I pinch things. I'm a professional thief." Right? That's what I do for a living. know, he goes off and he like that. So some people are like that. So they need reformation. If you've got that kind of character, you keep doing the wrong thing, then you need reformation. You need some heavy punishment. So until you get punished, you don't change your mentality. And the problem is in the modern world is they think we can just get away with anything. I can steal this and I can do that. I can drink this and I can do that. And I can any activity I want. I can eat whatever I want. And there's no punishment. That's the problem with the modern society. Right? In the ancient cultures, everyone has a fear that if I act improperly, what will happen? Right? I'll get some bad karma. Not that. But these days, people live like there's nothing in the next life. And therefore, I can do whatever I want and there's no judgment. So, obviously for us, that is not true. We understand. Devotees are fearful. We have to be fearful. Because we don't want to step outside. We understand if I have illicit sex or take intoxication or gamble or eat meat, I will be punished. So devotees are very strict. Right? We check the ingredients on everything. Right? Even if it's got a little bit of egg in it, oh, we won't touch it. Right? If it's got onion and garlic, oh, we won't touch it. Onion and garlic is not sinful. Like if you eat something that's got onion or garlic, it's not like, oh, Yamaraj says, okay, take him to the garlic planet and we'll make him eat garlic for 1 million years. Garlic soup and garlic. It's not like that. Onion and garlic, you don't get like pap, it's not like sinful. But it will disturb your consciousness, that's the point. So the whole point is that we want our consciousness to remain clear, purified, devotional. So Rupa Goswami, he says, or he quotes, that everything we do in Krishna consciousness is based on two principles. What are those two principles? Always remember Krishna and? Never forget Krishna. Okay. So everything, the whole Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, right? At least the first section of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, right? There is two principles, viti and nisheta. What is viti? Things you have to do. What is nisheta? Things you must avoid. Like that. So, always remember Krishna. Never forget Krishna. Right? So all the things we're supposed to do, they help us remember Krishna. Therefore, when we take initiation, right, we take one viti. What is that one viti when we take initiation? Chant 16 rounds a day. Right? Why? Because if you chant 16 rounds a day, that will help you remember Krishna. Right? And there are four things, nisheda, right, which you're asked not to do. What are those four things? Illicit sex, intoxication, gambling. Because those things will make you forget Krishna. Right? Always remember him, never forget him. Therefore, there are things within the Shastra which were said, do these things, do them as much as you can. Right? Lord Chaitanya says, Panchanga Bhakti. There's five things which are very powerful. Sadhu Sangha, Nama Kirtan, Bhagavat Shrila, Srimurtir, Shradaya Sivan, Maturabhas. Those five things are very powerful. Do that as much as you can. Your whole life should just be these five activities. Right? And then avoid these other things, because the other things will make you forget Krishna. So there are prohibitions, things you must not do, sinful activities. So devotees are very careful. Right? We don't do these sinful activities. Right? We're very careful. We won't eat anything. You know, it's devotees, we check. You know, they give us some dahi, some yogurt or something. They say, you know, check the ingredients. Does it have? Just like sometimes I go to my mother's house, you know, have something to have a meal with her. You know, but even to this day, it's been a long time. I've told her so many times. And she always says, yeah, she is careful. But then even sometimes now, I check like the cream or something. You know, I look in the cream, oh, it's got rennet in it. I say, Mum, what are you doing? She goes, I checked it. I said, well, read the ingredient. Does it say, what does it say? You know? So devotees were very conscious about these things. We will not break these principles. And Rupa Goswami, he gives us a number of offenses to be avoided If you look in the Nectar of Devotion, the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, then there's a description of how to perform bhakti. You get to chapter 6, right? And it says devotional service and practice. And then he gives 64 items of devotional service. So chapter 6, he begins to list, or he lists the 64. And then he gives the bhakti dwara. Bhakti dwara means like the gateway to bhakti. So the first 20 items of the 64 are considered to be the bhakti dwara. The first 10 are positive, they're vidhi, things you must do. And the second 10 are things you must avoid. And when he gets to, I think it's the 17th or 18th or so. And then, chapter 8 is a list of, and then he expands that particular anga. And then chapter 8 in the Nectar of Devotion is called offences to be avoided. 64 things you must not do. This must be studied very carefully by the devotees. I've read this many, many times. Because we have to understand how to please Krishna. You have to know what pleases him. You have to not offend Krishna. Avoid doing the wrong thing towards Krishna. You have to be knowledgeable. If we're not knowledgeable of our activities, of what to do, we may have the right intent. We may be favorable towards Krishna, but not pleasing to him. Because we're not doing the right thing. Just like a famous example I've given many times. Many years ago, people come to see the deities. So in the evening, 7 o'clock aarti, someone left a box in front of Radha Balabalaya. Gift. So Pujari, after the aarti, he grabbed the box, took into the paraphernalia room, see what has been offered to the deity. So they open up the box, a box of cigars. Okay. So anyone who knows Krishna. So in the West, right, if someone has a baby or something, you give them a box of cigars. Oh, congratulations. So it's considered a good gift. Right? But when you're dealing with Krishna, that's not a good gift. That's a foolish gift. No description of Krishna having cigars. Right? If you had have opened up the box and there was pan, right, it describes in the Shastra, Krishna takes pan. Okay, so that's okay. Right? You get some leaves, and then you put all the different pan, the spices, the ingredients, and then you fold it up very nicely. You can offer to Krishna. Cigars, not. Tobacco, not. One time Prabhupada was in, I think it was in Gujarat, I think it was in Surat. And Prabhupada was on a morning walk, so he's walking. And then Prabhupada looked into the field. And Prabhupada said, "What is that they are growing?" And they said, "Prabhupada, that is tobacco." Prabhupada said, "Why are they growing tobacco?" They said, "Prabhupada, because they grow tobacco, they make it, harvest tobacco, and then they send it away thousands of kilometers, and then they make cigarettes. And the people who make cigarettes send money back to the people, the farmers who grow the tobacco." And then Prabhupada said, "What do they do with the money?" And then the devotee said, "No, Prabhupada, they buy food." And Prabhupada started to laugh. So you grow tobacco so you can send it away so it comes back so you get money so you can buy food. Or, if you had a little bit of intelligence, Sumedasa, if you had a little bit of intelligence, you just grow food. What's the point? You send tobacco so you get food. Just grow food and then it's all done. Right? And then you didn't have to do anything inappropriate in between. But the way the modern world is, people do all these kind of things. They don't understand. They don't have knowledge. So what is the point of this Krishna consciousness movement? The whole point of this Krishna consciousness movement is to give knowledge to the conditioned souls. How to live properly. How to avoid pap. How to live appropriately. How to not go and see Yamaraj. Hands up if you want to go and see Yamaraj. Yeah, I'd like to see him. Not in that form where he puts the vesh on, but in the other form where he's doing kirtan. Yeah, I'd like to go and have his association and serve him. But we don't want to go and see Yamaraj. We don't want to get punished. And the only reason people are being punished is because of pap. And pap is because of a lack of knowledge. People don't understand. In the modern culture, people don't. They just do everything. They break all the regulative principles every day. And they think that's just normal. And the government sponsors it. The government encourages it. Just like, if you go down Kerford Road, back down there, and you get to Canterbury Road, turn. You know, years ago I saw there's two signs. They have signs, like a V shape. One's on one side, one's on the other side. So on one side it says, do not drink. Don't drink and drive. You know, like, you know, don't take alcohol. And then on the other side there's an advertisement for beer. You know, that's a modern society. Government says, oh, don't drink. It's not good. And on the other side it says, yeah, drink. Come on. So it doesn't make any sense. Lack of knowledge. So people don't know. Every day they're just encouraged. And the government says, yeah, come on, drink. Right? Oh, we don't have enough money in the state of Victoria. Right? This state we live in now, in Australia. Australia is considered one of the most affluent countries in the world. And Victoria is considered the most affluent state. We're living in like swagger. Really, on earth at the moment. Like it's opulent here. The standard of living is very, very high. You can get whatever you want. You can do whatever you want. It's like, you know, it's very opulent here. So right here in this part of the world, in Victoria, you know, years ago, this state had a debt. It didn't have enough money. So what did they do to solve the debt? Right? They opened Crown Casino. Right? And when Crown Casino opened, now we're the richest. Right? So much money goes into that place. And the government just taxes. The government says, yeah, come on, gamble. Everyone gamble. Right? And then they put ads on the news. Oh, don't gamble. Okay? Gamble sensibly. Be a responsible gamble. It's addictive. Gambling is addictive. That's why. You know, I mean, none of us have probably experienced it. But one of our regulated principles is don't gamble. Hands up if you struggle with that. I don't struggle with it. Like, for me, that was nothing. You know, when they said gambling, intoxication, you know, illicit sex is a bit difficult. Right? That's like a... We all have sex desires, so that's something you have to fight with. But, you know, eating meat, intoxication, gambling, that's easy. For me, that was like, no problem. But for many people, gambling is not easy. Right? Gambling is very strong. It's addictive, actually. And many of those people are addicted. But the government says, oh, be responsible. Well, but do it as much as you can. But be responsible while you're doing it. Put as much money in there as you can, because, you know, we get the money. But no, be responsible. No, it doesn't make any sense. Right? And then they say intoxication. They say, drink responsibly. but as much as you can. But responsibly. Right? So there's no understanding. So therefore, people, they don't act with knowledge. So the Hare Krishna movement, ISKCON, the Vaishnava movement... Right? As devotees, the purpose of this movement is to spread knowledge. Therefore, when Prabhupada was on this planet, what was the one service that he emphasized above and beyond all other services? Yeah. Yeah, like that. Or the main thing he emphasized is book distribution. Yeah, he said, distribute books, distribute books, distribute books. No. Prabhupada emphasized that more. Why? Why are we meant to distribute books? Why are you meant to dedicate your life to distributing books? No. Because if you distribute books, right, people get knowledge. Right, it changes civilization. You know, I used to be a full-time book distributor. You know, I was a brahmachari. That was my seva, just distributing books. You know, so some periods of my life, that was all I did. That was my only service. And sometimes I'd be on Swanston Street and I'd be selling someone a book. And then someone else would walk up while I'm selling that person a book. And they'd walk up and I go, I got that book yesterday. That's amazing. Yeah? So I wouldn't say anything. I'd just let them preach. You know? And they would say, oh, they're amazing. Then they'd walk off and the other person, I didn't have to say anything. They said, yeah, how much do you want? And just give the donation. Yeah? Because if people read these, even one time I was on Swanston Street and I was selling a book. And this guy came along and he had his bike. And he just finished work. And I said, oh, you know, you want to get one of these books? He said, no, I'm already reading them. I said, oh, okay. I said, what have you learnt? And he said, I've learnt the Hare Krishna mantra is the Yuga Dharma. And I said, oh, really? And he said, yeah. He said, there's no other way, there is no other way, there is no other way. And he's telling me all this. Right? And he said, I ride my bike home every day from the office. It takes me half an hour. He said, the whole time I chant the Hare Krishna mantra. Right? I said, really? I never saw him again. But he actually said this. I was shocked. He looked like an ordinary guy. But, you know, because of the knowledge he'd gotten, that knowledge is going to save him at the time of death. There's many people like that. They have this knowledge. People have contacted me over the years. You know, just out of the blue, someone will. Even at the farm sometimes, someone rings the phone and pick up the phone. One guy said, yeah, I'm watching your videos on your website. Right? Lives out in the middle of nowhere, never sees devotees. But he's like in contact with devotees, becoming Krishna conscious. So Prabhupada said we have to spread this knowledge. That is the responsibility of the Hare Krishna movement. If you're in this movement and you're not taking responsibility, right, to spread knowledge, then you're failing in your situation. Right? All of us have to distribute books. Or, you know, you have to do some sort of preaching, seva, like that. Just like I have one devotee friend. He lives down there in Brighton. His name is Gaurav. He's a jeweler. Anyone knows him? Gaurav, hands up, you know him? No, you all know him. Right? You watching now? Can you see? Gaurav. So he runs the jewelry shop. And now, when you walk into the jewelry shop, the kirtan is going all the time. Right? This is his way of preaching. Right? He's giving people knowledge. So kirtan, you go in there, you're sitting there, you know, saying, oh, I want a sapphire ring or I want a ruby ring. But, you know, in the background, it's got Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. So you're getting purified. And then everyone who walks in the shop, he gives them prasadam. He has cookies, prasadam. And he gives everyone who walks in, everyone takes prasadam. And then he has back to Godheads and higher tastes and sitting there on the counter. So when people come in, he encourages them. You know, you buy a ring, oh, you should give a donation, you can take this as well. Take back to Godhead or take a higher taste or, you know, coming back or like that. And if they make a big sale, then he gives them like a free book. And his brother now, he's a jeweler in Delhi, Himanshu Prabhu. And his jewelry business is doing very well. You know, the jewelers have been doing this for lifetimes. You know, jewelers, that's their vocation. So now he buys Bhagavad Gita's. Everyone who like spends over 2,000 rupees or something, he gives them a Bhagavad Gita. Okay. He's distributing boxes of Gita's every week. Because he's getting 200 people a day walking into his shop, a certain amount of buying. He's sending boxes of Bhagavad Gita's he's distributing. So devotee, you have to think. Right? We don't want to give people jewelry. Okay, that's okay. Jewelry you can give something. But that's not the goal. ISKCON's goal is to give knowledge. Right? We have to give knowledge any way you can. Just like years ago when I was a book distributor, we used to work hard. We'd go out on the street, do marathons, 1 month, whole month of December. Right? And all over the world they'd send the scores in. And number one in the world, or number two in the world, there was always a competition, Harinam Ananda Prabhu and Navina Nirada Prabhu. So Navina still travels, he comes here. They were number one and two in the world. So they would distribute thousands of books. You know, Harinam Ananda Prabhu, he set the world record, 969 hardback books in one day on the street. 969, nearly 1,000 books. And he said, I would have done 1,000, but I was in Maya. You know, I mean, powerful. You know, 1,000 hardware. We couldn't even imagine it. We were selling 100, 200, something like that. These guys were selling. Them. So then, we're having big competition. So for the whole December marathon, you know, all over the world, we're distributing. And you know who won the marathon? Right? You know who won the marathon worldwide? Jayapataka Swami. Right? He walked into a meeting. It's like all these big factory owners. And he walked in, Amaro said, I want all of you to sponsor Bhagavad Gita's and for Christmas, give a free Bhagavad Gita to everyone in your factory. So he sold 30,000 Bhagavad Gita's in half an hour. And then he won the marathon. Right? And all of us were out there working for 1 month, you know, on the street. Amaro came and he just won in 1 hour like that. So that's the point of the Hare Krishna movement. Prabhupada actually said, no one should ever come to one of our programs without taking prasadam. He said, no program is complete without prasadam. And if you go back to 1966, New York 2nd Avenue. Prabhupada, sometimes he would finish the lecture. He lecture Monday, Wednesday, Friday night, and the hippies would come and do the whole thing. Sometimes all the Prabhupada had to distribute for Prasadam was an apple. So Prabhupada would take the apple and he would cut it into pieces. So you'd get like a little piece. There's 20 people there. One apple, 20 pieces. And he would offer it to Krishna and then he would give that and everyone had to have some Prasadam. He insisted. Why? Because if you take Prasadam, you become purified. And when you become purified, you can understand transcendental knowledge. Yeah? So we have to understand these things. Prabhupada said, holy name, Prasadam, and book distribution. That will change the world. And that's the responsibility of every devotee in ISKCON. You have to make sure people are getting this knowledge. They're getting the holy name, which purifies them. They're getting Prasadam, which purifies them. Why? So then we can give them transcendental knowledge. Even the Hare Krishna Valley, like we're just some little outpost out the back of, you know, Geelong, Bambara. Like, no, where's Bambara? You know how many people live in Bambara? Population? It's probably like 40 people or something. It's out in the back of nowhere, Bambara. Yeah, there's me, there's Di, Countrywide Cottages, there's Tracy down the road. Bambara guys. Yeah. There's probably about 40 of us or something. Now, you know what Bambara means? In Aboriginal, Bambara means mushroom. We live in mushroom. Right? When the British first got here, you know what they actually called that place? Where Hare Krishna Valley? They called it retreat. That's actually what they called it, retreat, because they thought that was a nice place to go for a retreat. So then we brought 200 acres and we started Retreat Center. It says on our front sign, retreat center, like that. So now it's called Bambara mushroom. If you go down there now, there's mushrooms coming up everywhere. Right? But you're not allowed to eat them. Forbidden. So, even in Hare Krishna Valley, you know, we're doing our preaching. We only have a handful of us. You know, I need about 40 devotees, really, to run that project properly. But we have six. So we do as much as we can with six devotees. It's austere. You know, Kali Yuga is austere. You have to push to preach. But we're running retreats, and now, from our retreats, we're doing regular retreats, we're getting Western people coming. We've got about six people who are in their 40s and 50s, about my age, who are chanting every day now. And practicing Krishna consciousness in their homes every day, and offering their food every day. Nice people. One person works for the Air Force. One person is a school teacher, two are school teachers. One lady is a counselor. You know, mature people. So the point is, we don't bring people to our temple or to our farm. Or if someone comes here, they must get the holy name, they must get prasadam, they must get transcendental knowledge. Yeah? Because knowledge changes activity. That's why the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita is called Karma Yoga. Karma means activity. Fourth chapter is called Jnana Yoga. Jnana means knowledge. Right? Karma is useless without knowledge. Right? You can act, but if you don't have knowledge, you won't do the right thing. So Krishna says, okay, karma yoga, right? You act properly, but you'll only act properly when you get knowledge. Right? He says, yad yad, acharati stresdas. Right? That's in third chapter. Right? Act, follow my example. But then fourth chapter, he said, tadvidi pranipatina. But you must have a guru. Because the guru will teach you how to act properly. So that is transcendental knowledge. So that's the whole purpose of ISKCON. Right? So this whole chapter is meant to scare you. Have you read this chapter? Some heavy stuff in this chapter. Right? It's pretty heavy, you know. Going to see Yamaraj is frightening. It's meant to scare you. Just like the kids, we have to, hey, harf. Sometimes you have to be heavy with the kids. You know, my daughter, sometimes she says things, I have to go, hey. And then she gets like that. Because you have to scare someone, right? In order to discipline, to change their activity so they'll act in the right way. So this chapter is meant to scare us. We don't want to act, otherwise we'll go and see Yamaraj. But if you have knowledge, you'll never see Yamaraj. Transcendental knowledge, divya jnana, hride, prakashito. Purifies your heart and then you'll act properly. So that's the whole point of the Bhagavatam, to give us spiritual knowledge. So we'll stop here, we'll see if there's any questions or comments. What we discussed. Yes, madam.
I've got a few comments.
Okay. Everyone knows who this is?
Yeah.
is Sarabhi Mataji. She's a disciple of Srila Prabhupada. And she preached for many years. You know, there's one town at the top of Australia, it's called Darwin. For how long were you there?
15 years.
She was the only Hare Krishna in Darwin. And every week, there's a market, like big market, famous, thousands of people come. And she distributed prasadam there at that market for 15 years by herself. And purified many people in Darwin.
Mainly books.
And books.
Books and paraphernalia at the markets, 4 markets a week, for 6 months of the year.
Yep.
And two markets for 6 months of the year. And the prasadam distribution, I started the prasadam distribution because when the people would come, up in the 6 months, I'd say, have you got a Hare Krishna cafe here? And I'd say, no, I'm not booked. And they said, please, please start one.
So she's up there, Darwin. Go and live in Darwin. It's out in the middle of nowhere. She lived there 15 years by herself and distributing books and distributing prasadam too. That's what the Hare Krishna movement is about. So whatever she says, everyone listen very carefully. She's our guru. What do we do here in Melbourne? What do we do with the pan after them? The beetle. What do we do? We offer to Krishna. Then what do we do at the end? I don't know. You store it. And then what happens? Like that. Yeah, we can't eat it.
Yeah,
you can throw it in the compost.
Yeah. Victoria was in debt, so they got the gambling house, and they encouraged people to go to the gambling house, and then they set up institutions to help people to overcome the gambling. You know, but the reason why they like the gambling, cigarettes, gambling, the meat eating industry, all these things, they get revenue from it. So on one side they're telling us not to do it, but on the other side they're trying to just encourage them. The drugs, right? All the drugs that come into the country, you don't even know half of how much comes into this country, because half of it gets swept under the table, and the police are so corrupt with stuff. So we are living in a society who's saying they're for us, but they're totally against us. So this is why I'm not afraid. And someone's not God conscious, they are not trustworthy. Mm-hmm. And you know, the devotees go away from Krishna consciousness, and they say, oh, you know, too much trouble, you know, Hare Krishna movement, they did this to me, they did that to me. So I just left. And the first thing is I did is I got a big bag of marijuana, it's done. But what happens to you when you take intoxication? It clouds the brain. You can't think a philosophy anymore. You actually think this philosophy is all wrong. And you think, oh yeah, Prabhupada taught us that, but actually, he doesn't really know. There's a higher philosophy in this. And they take up impersonalism. Because the drugs, the coffee, all these intoxicants cover them over. And then they can't even understand the philosophy anymore. And that's Krishna's trick too as well. You know? So be very careful. Prabhupada said, don't be surprised who comes, don't be surprised who goes, but be very surprised who stays. You know, because it's not easy. So it's like Krishna comes in like a razor's edge, right? You step one little part of the way to the side, you fall off. Something you have to be diligent all the time, like Prabhupada was saying, these principles, and then active devotion. I mean, you can either of them know more. But really, really important. And you know that the best way to make spiritual advancement, actually, I'm experiencing. I'll tell you a story about Darwin.
Have to be quick, sir, because we have to finish up.
Well, this is just one more story. This is a very, very long story. In Darwin, I wanted to get Tulsi. The man at the market, he sold Tulsi. And every time I bought Tulsi of him, he died. And I went back and he said, yeah, Tulsi just doesn't grow again. Anyway, I went to India one time. I go every year for the Maipur festival. And what happened this year, I went to Chapati, to Ramanath Swami's temple. And the devotees just looked after me so well. Oh my God, this is unbelievable. Like I've never got treated in my whole life. And I thought, oh, gee, these devotees, why should I ever say that? This is just so wonderful, you know? So I went to the Maipur Festival and had my gallbladder out, so I was complaining. And I went to the yoga group, right? And Jyotitaka Maharaj goes, if any of my god brothers or sisters want to talk, then they can speak. They can write their name down. So I tapped his devotee on the shoulder and I said, can I speak? And right my neck up, he goes, no, no. I said, give me that can. That's my brother there. He said I can speak. And he turned around to Maharaj and he goes, let her speak and give her the can. You know, so I write the name down. And so I had to go to the bathroom, so no sooner I come back, he says, where were you? Oh, Maharaj, sorry, I didn't expect you wanted to speak straight away. So I got up, because of my brothers, they were saying, to make great stewardship advancement by going out on parikrama. And I got up and I said to them, do you know how to make 100,000 times more spiritual advancement than going out just on parikrama? And everyone went, yes, yes, yes. And I said, what does Lord Chaitanya's favorite thing he like to do? Kirtan. No, I said, Lord Chaitanya's favorite thing he like to do is to serve the devotees. So if you serve the devotees, you see a devotee on the parikrama, he's fallen over, you help him up. You see a devotee who looks a bit weak, give him a drink of water. Right? If you see a devotee who's got a thorn in the foot, you take him over to the bed. And I said, you serve the devotees, then you'll make 100,000 times more advancement. I went home to Darwin after that. I bought a jasmine plant. It was get growing big, in a big pot. And I went out one day and I was chanting my japa, and here was Tulsi, wrapped around that jasmine flower. And I had hundreds of Tulsis after that. So that's the secret to success of keeping a Tulsi.
Thank you.
And you can eat the mushrooms. Prabhupada said, on our farms, the mushrooms that grow on the cow dung, and you can eat.
If there's nothing else.
If there's nothing else.
Yeah, well, that's the way pap works, karma works. So you do something simple in this life, you'll get suffering. And then if it's very bad, like vikarma, like heavy ugra karma, then you'll go to Yamaraja and then you'll get more punishment. Because the reaction is heavy for what you did.
Even though it's getting the same thing being.
Yeah, but you read what happens in the Bhagavatam. When you go to Yamaraja, you get millions of years of suffering. Just for eating one cow, right? There's incredible suffering. So you can't get enough karma in this lifetime to negate. So therefore you have to go. Any other question?
What is the use of Yamaraj punishment? Because the people come back and they anyways, they forget the whole punishment and then again they engage in sleep activities. So, why?
It must have some effect on the consciousness, otherwise they wouldn't do it. The Lord would not punish, Yamaraj would not punish, it was not going to have effect. But if you look in the sixth canon of the Bhagavatam, there's the pastime of ajamya, right? And it's described there specifically that atonement does not destroy sin completely. So even like you do something bad, and then you go and do some good, pious activity, right, to destroy that pap, but then the desire to sin is not gone. The desire to sin only gets destroyed when you perform devotional service. Only devotional service destroys the desire to sin. That's not removed any other way. No. So, you know, just by pap and punya, that's not going to destroy it. But Yamaraj has to do something to at least keep us on the path. But it's only when you do devotional service. He wasn't perfect. So then he had to go take birth in Hardwar, and then he finished his life very Krishna conscious, and then he went back to Krishna. Is that okay? Any other question? Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.